Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, I'm Cindy Gross, your warrior and host of Cindy Spawner's radio show, Formative and Entertaining Manner. If I sound a little tired, it's because I was out celebrating last night the election, and I must tell you, the real winner of this was New York, because I can't think of another time in history when both major parties had their candidate and their election night gatherings only blocks away from each other. So it was quite an experience, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about it later. But I want to really talk tonight. First of all, tonight's show had a major change. Dani Dayan, the General Counsel General at the United Nations for Israel, was supposed to join us, but due to a last-minute technical issue, he will not be able to call in. So we will reschedule for a later date. I'm very sorry for that. I know many of you were looking. We'll have it very shortly in the next month or two. And actually, I think in some ways it's good because there's so much that's been going on in the news the past 12 hours in particular that we could really use this time to focus in, to have a major discussion about the entire election process from beginning to end, what started out the primaries through different candidates dropping out, through everything we went through. What is going on in our country politically? I have a few ideas of my own, and I'm going to share them in my extended Cindy's Corners opening statement point. Congratulate President-elect Donald J. Trump, Vice President-elect Mike Pence, all victorious senators, congressmen, state senators, state assemblymen, court judges, you get the picture. You all fought hard battles, and you were able to get at your messages. The people listened, and they put their trust in you. I honestly cannot remember an election night so filled with excitement. I mean, people were standing out on the street at 3 in the morning, and they still had to go to work only hours away. But they were thrilled, they were screaming, they were excited, they were hugging, and there were plenty of cries of tears, of joy, all through the hours of the night. But we now are past, we now have our present, we have to work on our future and moving forward. As a contributor, creative director, radio host, and now executive in media, as well as an activist, I have seen and met and heard from many of you who are not happy. And I am not talking about those in the Hillary Rodham Clinton and Bernie Sanders fan club. I am talking to you, the Never Trumpers, the Never Voters, the Ted Cruz diehard fans, and the women who are Republicans and conservatives who feel hurt by remarks like fat and ugly and not worthy of the Donald. It is time to extend our hands and work together. It is no secret that I am a supporter and activist for Ted Cruz. I understood that when I had the obligation to vote my conscience, and until our system changes, we live in a two-party system. So the libertarians and the progressives, the Green Party, the Tea Parties, while they rally, they don't really have strength in numbers. So when it came out of Cleveland and we had our nominee, I supported Donald J. Trump since July in Cleveland. I knew what was at stake, and I simply couldn't accept the alternative. And neither could any of you who gave Trump the 270-plus electoral vote. Now we must join together but to make America better than before, better than we ever imagined. And we can and we will if we do our part. I will do mine. Like I said, I am going to use my platform as an activist and journalist. I want to bring together the Cruises, the Rand Paul libertarians, those who supported Bernie Sanders out of anger and frustration, and yes, Democrats, even you. I want to bring in people who never thought of being part of the process because they thought it just wasn't worth it. You are the people especially that should be involved. Now, I remember days, and they really weren't very long ago, when Ted Cruz and Donald Trump worked together so well. The one issue I remember, I actually worked on rallies one with them, was the Stop the Iran Deal in New York and Washington. Everybody commented on their relationship, even the biased media. And during the first couple of debates, it was pointed out, and it was either a discussion of a Trump Cruz ticket. Well, we all know that didn't happen and what happened since. But trust me, they will be close again on a professional level. It's obvious. They will end Common Core together and Obamacare. They will build and rebuild our relationships with leaders from around the world. They will end the Iran deal and they will protect the Supreme Court. And Ted is in Washington and will be one of the first to reach out and bring Donald. I am sure of it. We must help Trump and his team by unifying the entire country. We must end the rhetoric of already planning 2020 and changing the rules of the party that we simply don't have enough control to do, because if we did, we probably would have done it in Cleveland when people wanted to. But whatever happened, and what we weren't able to do, how people voted, the rules seem to work. Because now we have the White House. We have the Senate. We have the House of Representatives. We have the Supreme Court. We have it all. Let's take advantage of this unique opportunity, because we don't want this to be the last one when we have all this control. So we should be making the best of it. I don't actually believe, and neither do you, that Donald Trump will be able to complete all the things he promised during his first 100 days in his mission. But I do expect, and so should you, some kind of accountability, some kind of action that we should all look at and analyze and help out with and contact him with our thoughts. He won our votes by promising to end corruption and scandal. We want careful and transparent investigations into the FBI, the DOJ, Benghazi, the Clinton Foundation, Black Lives Matter, unions, and into names like Holder and Lynch, Comey, Miller, Abedin, Wiener, showed last night. So, Donald, you said you were disgusted. Now put your words into action. You did something pretty incredible in your first choice of picking Mike Pence as your vice president. When we saw the choice between Pence and Kane, we knew you were on the right track. So please, we voted for you. We put our trust in you. Don't let us down. We will help you, all of us. And those are tonight's speaking points. We're going to have some more analysis with my friend, my mentor, a true patriot, a conservative, and above all, an all-around nice guy, Steve Lonergan.
Hi, Cindy.
Cindy. How are you?
Cindy,
are you
great.
There?
It's just great to be with you on this historic day after a historic day.
For me, it's quite a historic and exhausting day because we didn't get home till 3:30 last night, and it was still going on.
Really? Well, no, actually, yeah. Cindy, I fell asleep somewhere around 12:30 and kept waking up to keep in tune with what was going on. So I've been through many an election night, and I would categorize this as probably, if not the most exciting, the second most exciting to obviously Ronald Reagan defeating Jimmy Carter.
Mm-hmm. That's what everybody's saying. But people think this is even more exciting because they compare it, of course, with Carter and with Barack Obama. But people were so expecting that Hillary was going to win, and all these pulses, and I mean, just the atmosphere of everybody. I'm with Hillary.
Well, yeah, but I just want to say that Jimmy Carter's numbers were in the toilet, and Barack Obama's at a very high, relatively high approval rating. So in that regard, there is a difference. However, I will admit that it was absolutely precious to watch the faces of the liberal commentators on MSNBC and CNN as the numbers came in, and they seemed to be stymied by what they were seeing, and constantly saying, well, not all the votes are counted. Not all the votes are counted yet in Wisconsin, Ohio. Not all the votes are counted. There's other counties. They're not in yet.
What about Pennsylvania? One called Pennsylvania, then the others didn't.
It was
99% in, but they weren't calling it. They were like afraid to admit it.
It was a stunning win for America. And this nonsense that I keep hearing about, oh, this was a nasty, terrible, blah, blah. I think it was a great election cycle. I think it showed how dynamic and open and free this country is, and the rest of the world should just be envious that we're capable of having such full-blown dynamic elections. And now the day after, everything's fine. Everything's fine. Everybody's going to go back to work. People will get behind Trump. Some people will criticize him. But that's it. The country comes together, and the rest of the world just sits there wishing they could be as free as we are.
Well, I don't know if you heard my opening point, but I was trying to suggest that we should all unite and join together because we have such a unique opportunity. And that we have the House, the Senate, we have the Supreme Court, and we have, of course, the White House. So,
well, listen, Cindy, we've heard for a decade now how the Republican Party is out of touch with Americans, that this party needs to reinvent itself. Well, guess what? The Republican Party now controls Congress, the Senate, the White House, 33 of 50 governor's offices, the vast majority of state legislative seats, and the majority of local governments in the United States of America. This is basically a conservative country. And the Republican Party is far more in touch with the people of this country than the left-wing liberal Democrats of Bernie Sanders et al. So, yeah, this is a more conservative country than people realize. And
well, I will tell you that I have heard from people, even people from Hollywood. I've heard from people in Florida. I've heard from minorities, and I've worked the campaign with minorities. People are just sick and tired. If they're legally here, if they're working hard, they are tired of their tax dollars going to everything but their pocket. They want better for their children. They want to be able to walk in the street and not have a fight with rioting, and they want to respect their police, which was something
That's really sweet because it's all encompassing, Cindy. I have a different perspective. I think that what you saw here was explosion of white men sick and tired of being accused of being racists, sick to death of being told that everything that's wrong with this country, and that we no longer represent America. Well, guess what? You just got a big message. There are an awful lot of white men and women out there that still play a role in this nation and are still significant. And we're not going to be attacked anymore and told that we're racists, that we're responsible for all the wrongs of the country. In fact, it is white males who created the basis and the foundation of America and the founding fathers. And that's the real message that I saw. This other stuff about, you know, for the last 20 years I've heard about how, oh, America has a new face. It's no longer the face of the quote-unquote angry white man. You heard this idiot Bill Clinton talking about, we no longer represent gray-haired old white men. screw him, I'm one of them. You know, and I'm proud to be an American. So, yeah, I have a little, slightly different perspective.
Well, I understand exactly what you're saying because I heard it all day today and I saw all the social media remarks and the jokes. I mean, someone was passing around the Democrats that day. I don't know if you remember the movie The Sign Adventure and the song The Morning After. Like, oh, my God, it's the morning after this horrible thing. What are we going to do? And I switched it around and I said, we've had a shipwreck for 8 years. There is a morning after. There's not going to be any more Obamacare. There's not going to be any more Common Core. There's not going to be any more fighting with one of our strongest allies, Israel. There's no more.
Well, we believe that, you know, Cindy, we believe that's the case. And here's the issue. The Republican Party has no excuse not to live up to those promises. They now have Congress, Senate, and the White House. There is no excuse not to see an end to Common Core, an end to Obamacare, reinforcement of our support of our allies around the world, reinforcement of American exceptionalism, our military strength in this country, the securing of our borders and true economic growth. There's no excuse. There's no more having to kowtow to the liberal left because we just crushed them. The left wing of the Democrat Party was just crushed. Not beaten, they were crushed. Maybe they'll get the
message now. Not only that, I actually said something I don't know if you heard. But I know that Donald made a lot of promises for the first 100 days. I want to see, and I want the people to see, in fact, Kendall brought this up last week a little bit, accountability. I don't expect everything to be done right away, but we want to see actual people asked to do these jobs. We want some accountability. We want to see some work on this, that there's some initiatives. And we as a people are very loving and forgiving people. We're not the hating people that the country wants to make us out to be. And we will give all our help and support if we start to see work on this in the first 100 days.
Don't count on that. In a very short period of time, the liberal left is going to rise up. They're going to organize against Trump and any efforts to repeal Obamacare and do any of those things. And you'll see an organized, well-funded effort to do just that, to bring him down. That's exactly what's going to happen. Unfortunately, we got to worry up people like Kendall and these under-never-Trump people out there that they're going to be behind Donald Trump in this administration and not try to stab him in the back, and I think that's that's the
issue.
I
have Kendall on tape because she said it last week. Steve, I'm going to ask you just to listen in. We actually have a little surprise. You're going to be very interested. Late this afternoon, one of my friends who ran for Congress against Jerry Nadler and lost, Phil Rosenthal, called me because we were talking about the results, and he told me something fascinating. And this is something I think that we should also look at as we analyze the election. If you look at the map and everything is so red and there's so many little spots of blue within states that are totally never, ever Republican, we could really actually fix it if we take an example and get more help from the state and local levels in government. So I'm actually going to ask you to hold on and listen as Phil Rosenthal joins us, and he'll tell you his experience because it's quite fascinating how he ran on the Upper West Side of Manhattan against Jerry Nadler. So I'm going to put Phil on a second, and let's listen in. Hi, Phil. It's Cindy, and Steve Lonergan is listening in also.
Oh, hi to both of you. Thank you so much for having me on the program.
First of all, I just love you. You know that. And I have to tell you, you made such an impact for your first run in office that I know people supported you nationally and can't wait for you to run again. Steve Lonergan is an excellent, he has a great history of analyzing correctly and working on campaigns. And you tell me a couple of fascinating facts that I think listeners should actually learn about and take into account so that as we start on elections for 2017 on local areas in 2018, they should try to start now to try to mobilize on them and make sure that we're not red with blue dots, but we're all red. So tell me, share with my audience a little bit about what we discussed.
Sure. So tell you a little bit about the race that I had. And we are, it's the New York 10th Congressional District. And it's the west side of Manhattan, starting at Columbia University all the way down the Battery, and then it includes beautiful areas in Brooklyn like Borough Park and Bensonhurst and Bay Ridge. And it's known as one of the most liberal districts in America. Then, fortunately, even here we're seeing a shift, and we saw one yesterday. Not quite large enough for me to be joining in Congress just yet, but we saw some wonderful things happen. In the past, since 1992, every time my opponent Jerry Nadler ran, the Republican never got as much as 40,000 votes. And that's 12 races in a row. This year, I'm happy to say that there's a shift underway, and looks like it should be right at the 50,000 vote point. And so that's a big, big increase. And we're finding, you know, people were telling me on the street, you know, they never had voted for anyone but a Democrat before, but now they voted for me, and so we're seeing hope even here. And some parts of the district went very strongly on our side as well.
I found, and I know with you, and I'm sure Steve will vouch for this, because Steve's run for local office successfully, and he ran for governor and senator, so he could actually tell you. What we find in our local is that the heads of the state Republican groups and the state conservative groups really don't get involved, because sometimes they feel it's such a war, because they don't put in the resources financially and with manpower, and that they really depend on you a lot. And I know that was a big part of an issue for you. So if you had in like a minute or less to ask people or tell people what they could do to help out people so that the next time it's not 50,000, but it could even be a win, what could they do to get their offices involved?
That's a great question, Cindy, because elections are not won really in the month before the election. It's about changing our society, changing our culture now, and building the party infrastructure now. And so it's the little things. About getting politically involved today, becoming a leader in on your block or in your building, and starting to build the organization today, because that's what's often lacking in New York City. The party's been growing; it's been trying so hard to build that, but we need more of it. And so there's so many people who get excited and active in the month or two before the election. We need those folks to stay excited and work with us right now. And just another election day will be upon us in no time.
Well, Cindy, speaking of building for the future, who's going to run against Bill de Blasio?
There are so many different names going around, I don't really know. But I could tell you one thing. The governorship changed drastically for Cuomo because Carl Palladino's name has been thrown around, and so has Rob Astorino's.
Well, Carl Palladino, I don't think, is a viable candidate. But I have to ask you, your guest, I mean, I came into New York City last week, and for the first time in 20 years, I had squeegee men coming up to my car wiping the windows. I mean, I haven't seen that in well over a decade since Rudy Giuliani. How do people in New York feel about this, the homeless people over the streets of New York? I mean, urinating in the streets. It's getting pretty bad. I mean, why aren't people running against that? Why isn't the Republican Party in New York City running against that key issue?
I don't think it's just New York. I think it's in all the major cities. I hear there's some other people,
but we only care about New York. We care about New York City because that's where the squeegee men are. That's where the people are out in the streets of New York. And I'm just curious as to why I'm not hearing a lot of Republicans really campaigning against this huge degradation of the quality of life of Manhattan and New York City.
I think that Phil sort of just said it. And so they don't really look and put serious time and effort into building up candidates to be viable people to be candidates. What ends up happening is they pick people last minute and they send people out to raise their own money. Many of them are not politicians, and they're first learning to speak in public for the first time and learn the issues right before the election, which is wrong. I could tell you that Phil got a lot of national attention because he took up a couple of issues like the Iran deal and built himself with organization leaders. So people tried to help him out, but not many people were like that. So I wanted to, Phil to come on to talk about this because you're aware of this too. Anything else you'd like to share, Phil, before we go back to Steve? Because Steve really has a lot to say and knows a lot of the things nationally, and my audience.
Well, I'll just insert for Phil four key words. All politics is local. And what's happening to New York City under de Blasio is an issue that every congressional candidate should be talking about.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things I try to talk about that because saying that even if you don't have a vote, you can be a voice. And in fact, I could pressure the city council to do what's necessary and get the right message to the press. And I think I can tell you that the Republican Party here in New York City is very focused on finding good alternatives to Mayor de Blasio. We've had some folks like Michael Faulkner, I think, who already announced. And so people are very angry with all things you're saying about the homelessness, about people urinating on the streets, about crime rising. It's a deep concern. I think we'll have some great candidates. You know, I don't think we know all who they are yet. And the only other comment I would have on you were talking about the first 100 days, and now fortunately for the first time in so many decades we have both houses of Congress and the president. I'm concerned about the filibuster. The Democrats aren't completely without any power right now because they still have the filibuster, and unless a nuclear option is used, I'm concerned that there could still be gridlock in Washington. So I hope we can overcome that, and curious what you were thinking about that.
Well, I will tell you that this is Donald Trump is the first Republican president since Calvin Coolidge to come into office with a Republican Congress and Senate, so there are absolutely no excuses whatsoever for them not to achieve their results. The filibuster is just one tool, but the opposite of a filibuster is an anti-filibuster, and that's just everybody lets it run its course and stays for the vote and continues to push the agenda. You know, Republicans have used the filibuster much more effectively over the last decade, I think, than Democrats anyway, so that goes both ways. But, you know, in 2010, they said, give us Congress, we'll repeal Obamacare, we'll stop Obamacare, we'll cut government. And then Boehner said, well, yeah, we don't have the Senate. We can't do it. And then they got the Senate. They said, give us the Senate. Then they got the Senate. Now they have the Senate, Congress, and the White House. There are no excuses. No excuses for the Republican Party not to achieve the true kind of results that I want to see. Cuts in taxes, cut in the corporate tax, cuts in the regulations that are crushing businesses, the repeal of Obamacare, the allowing our $3 trillion of stranded offshore profits by American corporations sitting in Europe and Asia to come back to this country being out of tax, out of existence. In the first 100 days, Donald Trump could rock the world, send Barack Obama's legacy into oblivion, and we can watch the stock market skyrocket even more. Because if he gets these regulations and these bad policies out of the way, they will unleash the animal spirits of Americans' free enterprise system to truly grow and prosper the way we should. We no longer should be accepting the mediocrity that we've accepted under Obama and the Obama vision of a mediocre America. And I think that as a Republican in the next 100 days, everybody has to get behind this guy because the whole country, Cindy, is not going to get behind Donald Trump. The liberal left is going to gear up to fight him every step of the way, so be prepared.
Well, I'll just say something that I went the night before the election with people, and we were at a meeting with some of the advisors to Donald Trump, in fact, and a lot of people that are very knowledgeable. And the big fear coming out of everybody's mouth was whether or not Donald was going to win or Hillary, that Barack Obama would use his last days in office to do things to try to, example, pressure Israel more, maybe with the two-state solution that he wanted.
Yeah, he's a lame duck. He's a lame duck.
Now it's, but we don't know what the rest is going to try to do. Because even today he said in his speech he's giving Donald Trump this legacy. So now he's giving this legacy of what? His legacy was so well that he got really blown away yesterday. And we don't know what's to come because one thing, like we said, we want investigations. Everybody still wants to know what's going on, what went on that was so corrupt, where our tax dollars went, what happened in Benghazi, what's going on with our relationships with other countries. These are still big concerns that are still in those emails. that is still...
Well, I will tell you, Cindy, I think the Hillary Clinton email issue is behind us. So is Benghazi. I think this stuff is in the rearview mirror. It's over. And I think there's going to be a lot bigger focus on the future, because as Donald Trump rolls out his agenda, you're going to see a national outcry against an effort by Republicans to repeal Obamacare that's going to make the Tea Party movement look lame. They are going to gear up in a big way. You're going to see people in the streets. You're going to see people laying in stretchers, acting like they'll have no health care unless we keep Obamacare. It's going to be a nuclear war in terms of politics. I absolutely guarantee it. So you guys can remember this 6 months from now when they're trying to repeal Obamacare, and you see people marching on Times Square, you know, carrying people with intravenous devices and making an example. Oh, we'll have no more health care anymore if you repeal this. That's what's going to happen. So I'm just warning you, be ready.
That.
It's going to be fun.
I saw so much education today with all the testing with the Common Core, and all the union people are, like, going crazy over this. We're going to lose all our tenure now. We're going to lose all this. Forget about the kids testing, all the evaluation problems are going to develop, and it's going to be crazy, and the union's not going to work anymore. I mean, it was just beyond, and people don't realize that a big part of our problem is that the system is failing for our children, and it's failing for the parents who are watching their children struggle and who are still paying for kids who are dependent in their 20s. It shouldn't be like that. So I totally agree with you. I hear it a little bit already. Phil, you have anything else? Well, I know that you must be exhausted. You were out late, and Phil's getting married soon. So either one way or another, he's having a party in January, a big celebration.
That's right. I win either way. Cindy, one very quick comment. I really appreciate you raising the issue of what the harm Obama still could cause Israel. And I agree he's a lame duck, but if the Palestinians are planning to bring a resolution to the UN Security Council imposing a solution on Israel, and we need Obama to veto that, to use the United States veto, and if he doesn't, the resolution likely would pass, and that'd be a horrible thing to happen. It would be very hard to undo, because any future resolution that comes, you know, President Trump would support it to undo the damage, but then Russia or China would veto it. And so we really have to watch out for what I agree with everything else that said, that there's so many exciting changes that now the Republicans can and must bring about. But I'm not as confident that we won't see more harm from President Obama in the remaining weeks.
I tend to agree, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I know that you're interested in it, and you know I'm working on tomorrow at 12:30. Anybody who's listening who is in the tri-state area that will be in New York City, there is going to be a huge rally. It's sponsored by about a dozen organizations regarding the supporting the rejection of the UNESCO resolution about the history of Jerusalem, protecting the Holy Mount and the Western Wall, and now even the Dead Sea Scrolls. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about it later, but I'm glad you brought that up, because that is a concern, because once something comes out, it brings into people's thoughts, and it makes people think, well, it came up once, we'll have it again, and so I'm glad you brought that up. Again, thank you, Phil. Congratulations on a great first try. And I got to get you guys together in person, because Phil is going to be a superstar one day. He really made an impact in the community.
Good. Good job,
Phil. Thank you. Thank you both. Thank you, Steve, Cindy. It was a pleasure to be here. And I look forward to seeing you both in the future. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, Steve, I'm glad you heard this from somebody in Manhattan, and you're right. He mentioned Michael Faulkner. I think there's somebody with the last name Aquino who's looking to run. But a big problem is there's no big, big names they're talking about. At one point we heard in Cleveland Donald Trump Jr., but today I heard Donald Trump Jr. might be going into the cabinet, which leads me to my next question. I'm sure you've heard all day today the way I have. People going for cabinet positions. What do you think of some of the people that
I don't. I'd rather just wait and see who he appoints, because you can only speculate and you know, worry about rumors. I don't know. So we'll see. I'm sure Donald.
I'm sorry, didn't hear you.
What?
Oh, I was going in and out. I got a little static. I'm sorry. Can you repeat what you said?
I'm sure that Donald Trump will appoint good quality people to his cabinet. I don't know who they are. But I think what we can do is wait and see. I don't like to, you know, we can always, you know, worry about rumors and speculation. But we'll see what he does.
How do you think Donald Trump is going to relate to people like the Ted Cruz people, the Mike Lee, the Susana Martinez?
Well, they're in the – Martinez is a governor, and Mike Lee and Ted Cruz are in the Senate, will be in the Senate. And they're in the same party, so he doesn't have to, you know, he doesn't have to particularly do anything for them. He has to get their votes for his agenda. They're senators. They'll remain senators when he's president and after he's president, because you tend to stay in the Senate for a long time. Susana Martinez has a state to run. The work she does as a governor is different from president. She doesn't particularly need the president for anything. And if anything, he needs them more than they need him when it comes re-election time, and he needs them to get his agenda and his bills passed. That's why we have this dynamic form of government where no one person is in charge and dominates the field. So he doesn't have to go. People don't have to kiss Donald Trump's ring. He has to get them on his team if he wants to be a successful president.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny you say that, because shortly before we went on air, I was watching one of the news stations, and they were saying that the free Senate seats that we lost was Senate seats that were people who were not working with Trump and were not supporting Trump.
Well,
so
I don't know. Did Marco Rubio work with Trump? Marco Rubio, you know, pretty much attacked Trump. So did a lot of people. I guess that's questionable. I'm not sure if you're talking about. I'm not sure what happened. I think Kelly Ayotte lost. I'm glad she did. She's a total liberal. So what? We still have control of the Senate, and that's what's getting. Who lost really are the liberal Republicans. That's who lost. The liberal Republicans, like a Kelly Ayotte in New Hampshire, she lost. Conservative Republicans won. Maybe these Republican Party members should pay attention to that fact, that these moderates and these liberals really don't represent the core principles of the Republican Party or the American people.
What about people like Darrell Castle and Evan McMullen? Are they going to really be the future, join and come into the Republican Party, or are they going to be part of something different that we might see? Where's their future? Because they and this station, a lot of people support and like them.
I don't know. I don't know much about them, and I can't really answer. You know, this is a tumultuous political environment. It's designed to be that way. Things change constantly. If anybody told you 4 years ago that Donald Trump would be president, you'd think I was nuts. On the other hand, if somebody told you 8 years ago that Barack Obama would be president, you'd think they were nuts. So that's the American system. But we love talking about it, and pundits love second-guessing it, and pollsters love predicting it, and they're all wrong. They're all wrong. Isn't
Speaking
that great?
Speaking of saying that, I actually spoke today to somebody who works on one of the cable shows that is very well-known, and we were saying that probably the label of occupation of pollster is not really one to really have. They totally went wrong on 2012. They totally went wrong on ours now, and that people are really tired of them, and we don't even know if people should be doing this anymore. Because what, I mean, huh. Will there be a future occupation of pollster anymore?
Oh, yeah, there is. There is some realm, but you got to wonder about the pollsters who are actually lying. In other words, the liberal pollsters with all their phony predictions may be an attempt, just like they fed questions to Donna Brazile, might be an effort to, as Donald Trump says, system's rigged, to try to tell the American people, well, don't bother voting, it's already over. Maybe that's the case.
And what is that? You think Donald Trump is seriously going to go after the media?
No, I don't. I think Donald Trump is going to be firm on the media, but he's going to try to unify people. And maybe a CNN will have learned their lesson. Their credibility should be smudged by this, smeared by this. So, yeah, I don't think Donald Trump's going to go after anybody. I think he's got to worry about his cabinet, his administration, his agenda. He's not going to have time for battles like that. But I think he will hold them accountable, and I think he will hold them. Like, for example, why would you go on CNN as a president for an interview after what they did? He can do a lot of damage to these networks by just simply not agreeing to their interviews.
I can't agree. And even the print press. I mean, he has to just, you know, it's true you can't control the same way you can't control social media. But, I mean, there were obviously a lot of lies. Even the fact that the woman who came out, I remember that one woman with the airplane, someone came out and won the papers that he was sitting there and didn't see this. So, I mean, I think he is going to change things a lot because it's something that does bother him.
He was fondling her above the belt, and she said, well, he asked her to well, how long was that before he tried to go below the belt? And she said, 15 minutes. I couldn't help but laugh. I mean, let me understand. He's filling her up in a plane above the belt for 15 minutes. And that was okay. That was okay. So I don't know how that woman had any credibility at all, personally.
And all these lawsuits. Well,
what lawsuits? I'm not even aware.
Oh, supposedly there are a couple. Well, there are a few of the women that have lawsuits against him for.
Yeah, that's always campaign. That's all campaign rhetoric, Cindy.
Steve, we're going to be joined right now. Like I told you, I'm working very closely on a rally. Today happens to be a very historic day internationally, and tomorrow's event kind of ties into it and a little bit ties into our discussion and one of the platforms that Donald Trump actually won on. So I'm going to introduce Lynn Tamman. She's going
to
be coming on.
Thank you. And Cindy, thanks for having me. I have to move on to my next interview, and I'm happy to be with you, and I'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thank you for everything. As always, brilliant analysis brought to us in a fun, loving tone, and always appreciated.
Thank you.
I'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye. As I said, I'm going to have on Lynn Tamman. She's going to tell you a little bit about an observance that's going on worldwide today and about the rally tomorrow. Welcome, Lynn.
Hi, Cindy. Hi. Good evening. Hi.
Lynn is one of the most special people in the world. She works on her heart, trying to help everybody. I told my audience, first of all, you can tell them a little bit about what you do and your organization or your group that you have, and then tell them a little bit about the history of today internationally and a little bit about the UNESCO situation, why people are gathering and are so upset. And you have to give them a little bit of facts about it.
Okay, thanks for giving me the chance to talk about this, Cindy. First of all, I'm the chairperson of the Yom HaShoah Mobilization Committee. I don't want to even take the time to go into the history of the Mobilization Committee because it'll take time away from talking about UNESCO and the rally tomorrow and Kristallnacht, which starts tonight. I'm also the New York liaison to the International Legal Forum. That's very important because there's a lot that Yifa Siegel, the director of the International Legal Forum, had to say about the recent UNESCO outrageous UNESCO resolution, and she's intimately involved in fighting it on the international level.
She's actually probably number one. I just wanted to tell everybody. She's actually probably number one because she actually led a petition that was signed by over 100,000 people, and she hand-delivered it in Paris to the council, the entire council of the United Nations. So she's not just one of these committee people. She is the head of fighting this. So Lynn is her right-hand person, her American representative. And so tell them a little bit about what Kristallnacht is and what about UNESCO.
Okay, before I forget, Cindy, I just want to say Yifa's single is coming to New York. She's going to be in New York November 20th. And on that morning, November 20th, she'll be speaking at the Safra Synagogue in Manhattan on November, that's November 20th at 9:30 in the morning, 11 East 63rd Street. So for anybody who wants to ask questions about or wants a more in-depth discussion about what I'm going to say because we don't have much time, you won't be sorry if you come that morning to hear her. She's has so much to say about so many different topics that are going on internationally that affect Israel, that affect the Jewish people. Regarding tonight is the beginning of the anniversary of Kristallnacht. And it's so appropriate that Rabbi Avi Weiss is leading a protest against the most recent UNESCO resolution tomorrow at 12:30 in front of the it's going to take place in front of the Israeli consulate.
But
I don't have
really
the exact address.
It's not against the Israelis. I just want to explain
it's against
to my
UNESCO.
Audience.
Right.
Correct. But it's in
right.
support. That's why it's in front of the Israeli consulate. And you don't have to be Jewish. There are many Christians, many Arabs, many Zionists from around the world who appreciate the rejection of the UNESCO resolution. So go ahead.
Right. It's in support of Israel's connection to Jerusalem. Ultimately, but basically against the UNESCO resolution. And tonight is the beginning of the anniversary of Kristallnacht, which is the night of broken glass. That's what it means. And I thank my friend Mark Newman for providing this information. It was on this night in 1938 that the Nazis launched a campaign of terror against the Jewish people. Their homes and businesses in Germany and Austria were targeted. 100 Jewish people were killed. 7,500 Jewish businesses were destroyed. Hundreds of synagogues, homes, schools, and graveyards were vandalized. And this Kristallnacht was the dramatic escalation of a gradual campaign that Hitler had started in 1933. It just didn't happen all of a sudden in one night. It was a campaign to purge Germany of its Jewish population. And as David Horowitz has reminded us, the Holocaust started with words. And the protest against the UNESCO resolution is about words. UNESCO is responsible for passing many outrageous resolutions with language that seeks to eradicate any notion that there's a connection between Judaism and the Jewish people with Jerusalem, the Temple Mount, and the Western Wall. The most recent resolution by UNESCO refers to Jerusalem, the Temple Mount, and the Western Wall only by their Arabic names. And as Yifa Siegel has said, this is the pattern of all the resolutions by UNESCO, the most recent one of which was just one of the most outrageous. Now, Yifa Siegel, who's the director of the International Legal Forum, along with Shahar Azani, a representative of Stand With Us, presented a petition. I thought it was 85,000 signatures, but it may be more. Cindy, you said 100,000.
Because I also know
Yifa
and both Shahar are going to be coming on the show later this month. Hopefully together
That's
we're going to get them.
That's great.
Go ahead. Continue on what you have.
So they presented a petition with those signatures to the Director General of UNESCO, Irina Bokova. And the petition statement was that UNESCO is betraying its own mandate with their most recent resolution. Most people don't realize UNESCO's mandate is to educate people about cultures and heritages and to protect those cultures and heritages. It's about education and protection. Its mandate is to build bridges, if you can believe this, between different cultures and religions. Bridges of tolerance and acceptance. And Yifa has said that instead of advancing peace and tolerance, UNESCO is helping to advance and promote a radical ideology which seeks to erase and delegitimize religions other than Islam, including Christianity, of course. And it's this absurd effort to erase the Jewish connection to Jerusalem, which has existed for over 3,000 years, that is proof that there's a political agenda that's operating at the United Nations. I mean, even those people who are not religious, she said, understand that the motive of the UN is no longer truth, justice, or peace. And according to Yifa, the hope is that the court of public opinion will gradually deter UNESCO from doing something like this again, and there will be a next time. Regarding Jerusalem, she said that the UN might as well have said that the sky is purple, and the world has to begin to see that the UN statements they're losing. This shows that they have no credibility, and that Israel, you know, when they issue statements that Israel is a violator of human rights, those statements are as equally absurd. And I really thank you for giving me a chance to educate your audience about that, Cindy. It's really important that they understand.
For taking the time. Lynn was actually at an event tonight and took the time because this is so important to her. And as I said, it's not just a Jewish event. It's not just an Israel event, because if they could do this to Jerusalem, they could do this to any group anywhere around the world at any time, because once you put something in someone's head, they could expand it. So we have to end it. We have to show supporting the rejection of it and show the people who are by the Israeli consulate that we stand with them rejecting it. This is not a protest against the UN for it. It is a supporting people against it. I just want to make that clear.
Right. Hopefully the next one will be in front of the UN, a massive, massive collection of people and protesting in front of the UN.
One. Hopefully we're going to have the President of the United States, who already has addressed issues, who has the strongest pro-Israel platform of anybody we've ever had elected president, regardless of party, who wants to bring the capital to Jerusalem as a Jewish state, and who wants to end the Iran deal within the first 100 days, and who also happens to be a businessman who works daily with people of Muslim background, Christian background, and Jewish background. So he knows how to work with these people because he works with them on a daily basis, and he also knows how to pick people to work for him and under him that work with this. So hopefully everything is going to work out. I know you're busy because you did have a commitment, and I really appreciate that you took the time to address this issue and to
Thanks for giving me the time.
International audience. I will speak to you soon.
And just a reminder that if anyone wants to hear Yifa and be educated about so many issues, including UNESCO, to please come to the Safra Synagogue on November 20th. And if you're in Manhattan tomorrow at 12:30, if you have the exact address, Cindy, it's on 2nd Avenue, and I think 40.
It's by the Israeli consulate, I believe. It's 46th.
2nd Avenue.
2nd and 3rd.
Oh, it's on 2nd.
Right. I think it's near 46th. You'll see police and borders around it, so you will be easily focused where you'll see the group of people join.
Yes.
There are over 20 organizations involved, both Jewish and non-Jewish, all of them involving the idea of being pro-Zionist and understanding the historical rights of Jews being a part
the
of
connection.
The Western Wall.
The connection for over 3,000 years.
It's like
changing
the history of America, or saying that we didn't come from England and they want to keep
back.
It's
just absurd.
That's exactly what it is. So thank you again, Yifa. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Cindy. Thank you. Thanks. Good night.
Good night. Yes, thank you. To all my listeners, before we hang up, I want to thank you for being a part of our election analysis before, during, and after. For the next few weeks, I think we're going to go away from the elections, but to interest that every Republican and conservative enjoy. I want to focus in on a very special event we're having on December 7th. It's my first live event with the audience. It's Ladies Night Out, Girls Night Out, Book Club. I already have three confirmed best-selling authors, Jamie Brenner, Rochelle Berger-Weinstein, and Allison Richmond. All three are best-selling authors with multiple books. Follow me on Facebook, Cindy Gross. Follow me on Instagram, Cindy's Corners Radio Show. All the information is updated. Due to the success of this, we are also going to have a nonfiction night, and I already have two books there. And they will be included in my print, Cindy's Corners through Madison's Gift Guide. If you would like to participate, you have something that you think with the audience internationally would be interested in purchasing, send me, private message me your information, and I would gladly share it. We are going to build this up to be a place that is your go-to for food, for fashion, for trends, for lifestyle, and, of course, for news-breaking details. And tonight's show is really special because, for me, it was a victory, and it was actually a victory for all of you. We made our voices heard loud and clear. We are a conservative Republican country, and we are proud to be American. This is Cindy's Corner. Good night.